あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？見えない。
Nothing. But we already start with the cold open on this show, but this week we have some deliberate, you might call it white space here, because there's a big game out this week, but we haven't written about it. Not yet. We haven't talked about it. We haven't written about it. Not yet. And that game is Kingdom Come Deliverance. And of course, I am Danielle Riendo, and this is Waypoint Radio 135. Joining me today are Austin Walker.
Is white space a joke?
It was white space? That was the whole joke.
Okay. I got it.
I thought it was appropriate.
I get it. It's funny.
It's very appropriate for this.
I smiled.
I'm really glad. Sometimes I oversell my jokes.
It's fine.
And this time I didn't, and I was
subtle.
Really happy.
Subtlety.
You know, sometimes.
Brought to bear.
Sometimes you do a white space joke. And also, of course, joining us today is Patrick Klepek. How you doing, Patrick?
Hello.
Hi.
So Kingdom Come Deliverance is a game with a long history,
yeah.
I guess you could say, a long and storied history. And it's something we have been, I think it's safe to say, struggling with how to deal with it.
Yeah, I think it's struggling is probably too strong.
Grappling?
Grappling.
Grappling
with. Grappled, but
yes.
I want to be, it's like grappling like boxing where there are rounds and it's like a lot of like, hey, what should we do
so
with this thing?
So it's an MMA fight where there's grappling and boxing rounds.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. But short rounds.
Very short rounds.
Like
okay.
A minute long rounds. How long are MMA rounds?
5 minutes.
Minute long rounds.
All right.
So we like grapple and then we're like, oh, we got to do a billion other things.
Oh.
So it's been a sustained struggle is what I want to be clear
True.
With. It's been like,
True.
Hey, Patrick, are you checking that out? Rob, are you playing that? Do you have,
yeah, like this started
what are you
like
doing
a,
with that?
This started a couple of weeks ago when we, you know, the publisher of this game reached out and said, "Hey, we got this game coming out. Like, which platform would you like to play it on?" And I did my normal thing and like figured out who on the staff wanted, maybe was interested in this type of game,
right.
Figured out where they wanted to play it, and sent off the request to the publisher. We got some codes in like a couple days before the game came out, and everyone was kind of off doing other things. So like. No one actually – I think you maybe loaded it for a little while the weekend before it came out.
Yeah. I booted it before it came out and it was like, oh, I can't play this game and also watch a video at the same time because it would like completely crushes my computer. So I'm going to get back to this later. And then I just like went to bed instead.
Yeah. So I want to like sort of set up the context for like this is that
– what this is.
Yes.
Well,
yes,
more
yes,
that
yes, – yes.
Well, no, more that none of us had a particular interest in this game and then it came out. And then we sort of knew, like, you know, we can get into the backdrop of, like, a lot of the history behind this game and its connection to Gamergate. But we had sort of an internal conversation of, like, well, no one seems to be super interested in playing this game, which is fine. We don't have to cover every big game.
I would actually say that that's maybe mischaracterizing it in a way that there are receipts, which is we talked about this game on E3 podcast.
Yeah.
Rob went and saw it and thought it looked really cool.
Yeah.
I thought it looked like it had potential. I had known about it from some of the controversy, but also had seen the original pitch Kickstarter. And it is very much my style of European janky computer RPG. And I would go so far as to say that, like, if they didn't have the baggage and also probably if Monster Hunter wasn't out, this would have been a game that I would have taken up a lot of my time because I would have been looking for something to cover. Do you know
I guess what I was saying is there's no one on the staff that sat around having played this game for 30 hours and
100%.
Said, I'm just not going to write about this.
Like, 100%.
It was just a game
yes,
for a lot
yes.
of factors, like, we just didn't dedicate a lot of time to. But we yeah. had this conversation internally of, like, once the game, like, really – because there was sort of a thought that, like, well, maybe this game comes out and, like, it turns out it's bad. And
right.
then, like, it's just not worth our, like, intellectual – like, our time, our intellectual curiosity. But this game has come out and it is an enormous hit. It has
yep.
already sold as of, like, 48 hours ago, like, 500,000 copies, like, 100,000 copies
Steam.
At retail
just on
Steam.
Just on Steam, right?
Which
yeah.
means, like, this game is going to, you know, go on to sell, like, very easily, probably millions of copies. Like, it's a bona fide
yeah.
hit. And so – we thought like this podcast was a like a opportunity to like take what are our internal conversations and just sort of have a version of that.
Welcome to an editorial stand-up meeting where we're going to try to figure out what we're going to do with Kingdom Come Deliverance. I think that's, you know, it won't be as simple as that maybe, but like I actually would love to talk about what the various strategies are for covering a game like this and like why, what some of our interests are, what some of our concerns are, and like what the different possible ways to cover something like this are when they come across your table. You know, when something like this lands on your desk, and then especially when you know that part of your audience is really engaged with it.
Yeah.
How do you engage with it? So I guess like probably fair to do some setup, Danielle.
I think we probably
very
should.
Broadly introduce what the game is and why people are what is it?
Okay, so as somebody who somewhat followed the controversy, and I want to make sure I get the year right for the controversy.
Fair. It was also originally a Kickstarter game,
right?
100%.
Yeah.
And
like a very successful Kickstarter game, like on the pitch of, hey, do you want to be a character in a fantasy RPG, mm-hmm. but you're not, it's not Skyrim, like you're not right, so out to save the world.
Right. That's the pitch, right? Like the pitch on what the game is it's a medieval RPG that's set in part of, I believe, the Czech Republic now. It was Bohemia at the time, and I want to say 15th century, so like 1400s. It's the time of a civil war in Bohemia between King Wenceslas. I always pronounce that person's name wrong.
Sure.
It's like the Holy Roman Empire is kind of not falling apart, but is in the middle of an internal struggle.
And realism, with scare quotes around it, is one of the biggest sells of this game, and also part of the controversy.
Yeah, raised over a million pounds on Kickstarter years ago. And yeah, like no dragons, no magic, no...
Which is cool, like separate from everything. Like that, like the idea that like, yo, we're just going to drop you in this world and we're going to try and simulate it to the extent that like a lot of these other games do, and that it's like a small team like swinging big. Right. Like there's a lot of appealing things that pitch.
When I first saw that pitch, I was very excited. Like I'm the person who plays Skyrim with mods that make me not the Dragonborn, that make me the son of a miller or a blacksmith or a merchant caravaner who's like gets attacked or a bandit or something. Like I love the notion of like, oh, I want to be in a fantasy. I want to be in a fictional world. I want to be in, or in this case, not fictional. It still has some
fictional version of the world.
We know what you mean.
I want to be in a video game as a character who isn't the hero, who isn't there to save the day, who isn't trying to like kill the dragon and defeat, you know, Ultima, and you do all the shit that you do in fantasy
RPGs. You want to do your job, get through the day.
Yeah, and like if I get attacked by bandits and like fend them off with a sword, it feels dope, you know? And so I remember my arc with this, which we can get into like what happens here, is like, oh wow, that's cool. I wonder if I can create my own character. And they're like, no, you can't create your own character. Like you're going to play this dude. This is the story of this one guy. And I was like, okay, yeah, fine. Okay, that's fine. Yeah, it's totally cool to make a game about one character. Like, I wish there was customization. Like, there's all sorts of characters you could be in this setting. Like, you know, if it's a simulation, I would love to be able to come at it from different angles. And then, like, bit by bit, more came out, right?
Yes. A little bit more about sort of the political leanings of I believe he's the creative director on this game.
Creative director and also
co-founder of the studio.
Warhorse is the name of the studio.
This is Daniel Vavra.
I believe we're pronouncing that right. If we're not, apologies. Yes. People's names should be pronounced right, if possible.
Definitely true. And around the time, this is 2014, I'm seeing 2014 keep coming up here, which, you know, is a very important year for the history of video games and Gamergate and so on and so forth. It looks like it was spring of 2014 where some of this was starting to come out about – he had made some comments about the game and about basically whether or not there would be people of color in this world. And there was like a very – I don't know if I can get it verbatim. There's got to be – I'm sure somebody took this quote somewhere here.
The one about black people?
Yes.
I mean, this was an essential question. It was like, is this game going to have black people? And his response was like, there weren't black people.
Right.
So, they're not going to be in our game. And then the response to that was like, well, like, all actually.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
Like, we're not like, no one's arguing that like it was predominantly black people.
Right.
But it doesn't make sense if you're pitching a game on realism to say that there weren't any. And then his double down was to say, I'm from this area. Right. I know it better than you. This is my history. Right. Don't tell me what my history is.
Which they've since walked back. As a group.
Quite a bit, yeah, seems like.
But then that led into other instances, right? That led into...
the t-shirt.
Which was what, like hashtag based? And then like, I am a cis.
I got that one.
It was basically like today he'd be wearing a shirt that said hashtag deplorable, right?
Yes.
Like,
uh-huh.
Yeah, so he's very sort of like proudly brandishing his t-shirt in these photos. He's very excited about it and says based. Then it says white, privileged, able-bodied, cisgender, basement-dwelling, man-baby, virgin scum. This picture doesn't quite have the next word, but then MRA.
I think it says I'm an
shitlord.
I'm an edgelord. I'm an edgelord. I believe basically. That's what it might say.
Yeah, that's what it says. It's like, it says like, did I trigger you, Snowflake?
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
This is an original joke. That's what it says.
And that's a lot of like his commentary. Like outside of like the like back and forth over like the quote unquote historical accuracy of this game that is quote unquote his history,
right.
Is like a lot of him becoming sort of a lightning rod and a champion for a lot of people who aligned and saw themselves and supported and engaged with Gamergate by being a predominant design. Like he wasn't just a random Twitter egg. Right, like he was someone that was showing off a game at E3 and like doing interviews with outlets like Kotaku, who like, you know, Stephen Totilo, the AC over there, did a piece like trying to grapple and engage with the question of like interviewing a Gamergate developer. And so that like he became sort of a pretty pivotal figure to a certain section because it legitimized, like that was the key thing. He helped legitimize ideas, even if they weren't ideas he was necessarily advocating, but by becoming a sort of a lightning rod for it, he was in effect legitimizing Gamergate to a broad swath of people.
And using that sort of really shitty, low rent kind of punching below the belt humor to do so as well. There's sort of a famous tweet where he says, thanks to popular demand by history revisionists and for the sake of accuracy, let me introduce you to our protagonist. And it's like a picture of like Martin Lawrence, like
from Black Knight. That's Black Knight.
Right,
because is it this? Remind me if I'm wrong, because this is a couple years ago, but I believe this was also around the time when there was a lot of discussion about The Witcher 3. Part of the reason this came up was
in between, at the very least.
Yeah, it was coming like around the same time, like where he kept popping up as a figure, where there were some criticisms of Witcher 3, which is a wonderful game that a lot of people waypoint a lot, including myself.
Yeah.
But questions of like, why aren't there more like Black people in
The
Witcher 3?
People of color in general in The Witcher 3. Like, that's a setting that has people of color in it. There are like the other cultures exist there, and there are reasons for them to show up. And there was like a huge kind of lightning rod for conversation around that, in which the realism argument was like brought down again and again and again, like despite the fact that you're being chased by ghost horses that whole game, right? And like, which is wild.
The ghost horses or the argument?
You know, pick your poison, Patrick.
A little bit of both.
Yeah. And so like there was a lot of conversation around it then, and you could feel, I mean, for me at the time, I could feel certain people in various communities where those discussions were happening, like seeding the ground of The Witcher 3, especially because I believe some of the DLC does end up bringing in some of the characters from those places where there are people of color in The Witcher 3, like there are traders from another group or whatever, and previous Witcher games also included people from those cultures. But they didn't give this ground, right? Which is like, all right, fine, you can have the one that has dragons in it, but you can't have this one, which is real and about real history, and like, don't ignore the part where there are healing potions in this game.
Yeah.
Also, ignore the part where I stole an outfit, so I was wearing like a guard's outfit, and it was enough to like surprise the queen, who I'd spoken to an hour before. And she was like, "Who are you?" I'm like, "All right, yeah, realism for real though." So it is. I guess like to bring us quickly to speed here.
Yeah.
This is an issue that we have to tackle when it comes to like running Waypoint and thinking about what sort of coverage we give to everything, but also, you know, in a specific sense, it's like, how do you tackle this thing that has this history, that was made by between 80 and 150 people are the numbers that I've seen thrown around, depending on who you're counting as like part of the core dev team. That dev team is led by the creative director on the project. The company is owned by someone who has repeatedly said like really gnarly, gross shit.
Yeah.
Who has come out and had like half apologies. There's an apology you linked us to, Patrick, that is very long.
I could quote like the like most.
Yeah, that would be great.
Where he specifically speaks to Gamergate. I'm not going to read the whole thing. So say, in summary, I'd like to say that for me, At heart, it was always about the freedom of speech and the freedom of opinion of thoughts. This is me vomiting halfway through reading this. The freedom for artists to create art, free of political influence. For me personally, and I speak only for myself, should the artwork initially always be seen as free of political or ideological views, unless the art clearly and aggressively communicates racism or any form of discrediting of minorities. Such messages can, do, and will not be good, not only me, but our entire team. Today I see my comments in a different light, and I'd like to apologize if my points of view and individual discussion should have been better communicated by me. I'm sure I should have used a better word choice or form of communication. In some cases, I want to contribute with my view to the above-mentioned freedom of speech and my desire to make artists work without being influenced by the opinion of other people. This is my personal opinion. That whole thing reads very much like a publisher being like, yo.
yeah.
He was tased into writing this. Basically.
Totally. But also kind of doubles down in a sense on.
He doesn't actually sort of apologize.
No.
He's what he's doing is he's saying, I apologize. This is like when someone says, like, I'm sorry if I offended you.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
And when they say that, they're not actually apologizing for their speech. They're apologizing because someone said it was hateful and I got shit for it, as opposed to grappling with what I said.
Right.
Like, the idea that his takeaway is like, well, I was wearing a hashtag based edgelord t-shirt because I was fighting for freedom of speech and not just trying to troll SJWs, like,
right,
is bullshit. Like,
right,
that, like, at least own what you were doing. And, like, all this is just saying, like, I'm going to try and stem some headlines because if someone writes a review and then in a side part it says, like, yo, here's the shit about Gamergate with this game. By nature, like, it's in some ways preying upon, like, the nature of both sidism and reporting to say, like, oh, well, he issued this thing where later he says, like, yo, maybe I kind of fucked up.
Right.
And you end up naturally, and I know this as a reporter, like, this is just, like, your tendencies, you end up downplaying the previous history because the most recent thing then becomes, like, the more important data point.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What is, like, there's also a statement from the co-founder, Martin Klima, who says, who basically says, like, hey, we've been accused of malicious intent and people have said that we're racist, but we're not. And hey, it's not like everybody in this game is white or is like, you know, like Aryan or something. Like, there are people from the Czech Republic, Germany, Hungary, Jewish characters. There are Kerman characters who are like nomadic people of Turkish descent. But then this quote here is really great. Now comes the argument of the critics, but what about black people? After more than 4 years of intensive research, it can be stated that there is no proof that there were no dark-skinned people in Bohemia and vice versa. There are many things we cannot prove. Otherwise, we would have to assume, for example, that lions would have lived in the forests of Bohemia. After all, the coat of arms of the ruling house is adorned with a lion. Where else could people have had this portrait? And it's like, what he's saying there is like, well, we can't prove there aren't black people. There weren't any black people there. But then the next paragraph is basically like, but we're not trying to do this whole big thing. We're not playing a game about medieval Europe, but telling a story located in a very small part of medieval Europe. Our game does not focus on the quote-unquote big story, not on wars, kings, or popes, but on the story of ordinary people. I need to let y'all know, kings and popes are literally the first 2 hours of that game back to back to back. Like, it is about ordinary people, but it's about ordinary people caught between. Like, I can tell you that there was a time when there were three popes now because the game details that, and it's an important contextual thing for what's happening in the story.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing where you, like, throw shit on a dude's house because he was insulting one of the two kings and one of the popes. Like,
of course.
That stuff does come up. And the notion of, like, well, we can't prove that they're there, so we're going to default. Whether they're there or not, so we're going to default to them not being there, feels like a willful choice. That is not – like, what you're saying, Martin Klima, is, well, we can't know one way or the other, so let's assume no, or so let's represent no. And that ends up being, like, the most frustrating thing around representation is, like, when there is white space, when there is an opportunity, like, what are you gaining? And what is your motivation for being limiting instead of being expansive?
It's also so frustrating that he – does this thing of like comparing black people basically like
to
the lions. Like, like come on.
Yeah.
There weren't coats of arms with sea monsters and dragons and all that other stuff. But yeah, they were definitely living in the woods. Like, it's so frustrating because you're doing that thing of both completely showing how shitty and terrible your imagination is and your ability to actually understand the world. And you're also fucking comparing black people to lions.
Right.
Like, come on, dude.
Here's the other thing I'll say is, like, when you look at what historians what some historians have said about this game, the stuff that I've read on Twitter, stuff that I've read on blogs, a lot of them say, like, yo, if you think that you can zero in on like an actually historically accurate representation of this period of time in this place, get some historians on the phone because you got some breaking news. Like there's so many empty spaces when it comes to what real lived life in that era looked like because records are so limited.
Yeah.
Because records are so compromised and so biased in terms of where they come from. They come from the church. They come from people in higher positions of hierarchy who knew how to read and write. They have to do with activities that are often about faith or about politics. And so there's lots of like elements of day-to-day life that are missing or that are supposed or that are built upon certain sorts of evidence but not like clean firsthand evidence. And so there is something in the pure – in the rhetoric of the marketing that is like this is an accurate, realistic, true vision of what medieval Europe looked like, of what this little one chunk of medieval Europe looked like.
Based on our biased sources.
1950s textbook,
which
this is perfect.
But like I it is a disputed space and it's so frustrating to think that you couldn't encourage like inside of that disputed space, there's a lot of room to work, you know? But I think all of this is still like getting around – like it's still – we're in setup mode.
Right.
And I'd like to pivot into like the meat, which is like, all right, so here's this game. It's successful. It seems to succeed at a number of things.
And I've seen clips where like I can see myself going like,
Yeah, totally. I've played 3 or 4 hours now. I got through the introduction. The title is a late title card. There's like a the credits come up all over like while my body's being on the back of a cart being dragged from one place to another.
Didn't you have to replay like the first 45 minutes?
I replay the first 30 minutes because
of the save system.
Currently there is no quick save or to quick – sorry, there is a quick save, but the only way to quick save is to consume a schnapps. There's a schnapps called save.
So you just get drunk and pass out?
And you have to buy or brew the special savior schnapps. Savior, get it?
Yeah.
It's like saving your game. Save or you can sleep in a bed for a save. But like sometimes I'm out just doing stuff. Like I gotta I gotta go. I'm like have a call I have to get on. Look, I can't just leave this running on my PC.
Sometimes you read a take so bad that it makes you go to bed and go to sleep and save your game.
And save my game. Exactly. And so, but I did. I ended up like, all right, I'm going to try to put some time into this thing because I want to know if when we talk about this, should I, can I say that like, oh, actually the like the people of color who do make it into this game are turned into monsters in ways that are like shitty. And like not really. Like the people of color who have shown up so far, I don't know that I've seen anyone's face. They all wear masks. They're like – they're like – they are these cumin – cumin is a culture of I believe like step – a steppe culture of the kind of Eastern steppes, the Asian steppes, I believe related to – they keep saying Turkish, but I don't know that the mapping lines up to me in that way.
Yeah.
Who were historically a number of them were used as mercenaries by one side of this conflict. And so they are like the – like what was the – they were like being treated sort of like the Persian army in 300. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, this monstrous, savage, like super army is coming and like there's nothing the natives can do about it. And there's definitely work to begin unpacking stuff there, but I'm not deep enough in to see if that's ever complicated.
Right.
There's lots of like stuff coming from the position of characters who are like, I don't know who they are. I heard the word cumin. That might be a thing because like I haven't read any books ever. Your character can't read. When he looks at books, it's just like weird glyphs. And unless he gets instruction on how to read, he can't read. And so like that's the thing. It's like there is stuff in
this game.
In this game where you're going to go, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think that the combat model is pretty fun. And also I don't know – it feels like walking on eggshells even when playing it because it's so easy to see – some of that like underlying ideology and how those choices get made, but it's not – but it's always like dispersed, right? Like one of the big counterarguments that we've seen come up again and again about like how you should cover this is like, hey, this is one dude. One guy made this – didn't make this game. But
right.
This huge team made this game and we don't know what their political affiliations are. And we do know that like a lot of them would love to break into the games industry and have a shipped title under their belt and then they can go off and do something else. And it is – I'm not sure where I stand on a lot of this stuff yet. Do either of you have a firmer position? Or not position even, but feeling.
I mean, this feels to me like it's directly hearkening back, and it's not the exact same thing, but it's a similar idea to what we were talking about earlier about sort of like studio culture on Detroit Become Human or something like that. again, not the same thing. No. Not the same thing, so no. I want to be super, super clear. But it does feel like, okay, that's, you know, there's a lot of people who are dealing with crappy working conditions potentially right. to kind of deal with this, to yeah. try to make this game. And again, like you said, like make something, ship it, have that on your resume so you can actually go out and do something else. I don't know. He's a creative director. That's right. another thing.
And a co-founder.
He didn't make
like,
the music or right. whatever. Everything
this
is
important.
This
is not Subnautica,
everything
which was another
important.
Game yeah. that was in the news recently for yes. similar situations
yes.
where the sound designer or the musician, I forget what their role was, right. Made some really vile fucking tweets.
Yes.
And it was eventually removed from that position once those tweets kind of came to light publicly. But again, like that was a weird situation and it was a frustrating situation for a number of reasons, not least of which it suggested a sort of culture at the studio that didn't understand why those tweets to begin with were a problem until they were brought up. But once they were brought up, action was taken. And
yeah.
so like I think that's another distinct –
some credit there. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that there is But in that case, it was a sound designer or,
right.
or a musician or both. I forget the
Which,
exact
again,
role there.
To be clear, every creative person on any work is important.
Yeah.
However, creative director, there's a certain through line with their ideas and their sensibilities
well,
that goes into the product.
The other
and
one is
co-founder,
is co-founder
absolutely.
And this is the thing that makes
Leadership
it even more complicated.
At the studio.
Also,
yeah.
just like materially,
yeah.
that's the person who's going to win the most in terms of like fiscal gain for this game,
right?
Right? Like that he's as a co-founder is the one who is going to step away from the game selling well with fatter pockets and like with the ability to pursue future projects and with the ability to spend that money politically sometimes,
yes.
right? And so again, this is not like – I don't know. I don't know. I for me, a lot of this also ends up getting tied up into other conversations with how – what do we do with our dollar and like – it's very frustrating to be like, vote with your dollar. And I say that after having said vote with your dollar on an episode that we did a few months ago or a month ago on Red Strings Club, right? Which was like the opposite situation in that it was a very small team doing a very small game, but that instead of being about what their personal politics were about, it was like you and I getting very angry and frustrated with something in the content of
the game. Yeah.
And the thing where like, in a three – for me, I played through that game in 3 hours. That was like 15 minutes of that 3 hours. And so it's like, okay, that's a substantial portion compared to what might be really shitty in Kingdom Come Deliverance, but I haven't seen it yet because it's in 27 hours.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Things can hide in that.
And like,
yeah.
and like if I could redo that podcast, I would way scale back the vitriol that I brought there for sure. But what's that mean for this project where like – I know what the politics of one of the major people at play is but also haven't spent the time playing this game. But at what point do we say like, okay, well, there are a billion games for us to go play. I could go play another game by marginalized devs or games from people who just like are centrists and who aren't like being pro Gamergate, out there saying Gamergate had some good ideas.
I mean, that's the thing, right?
Right?
Like that's
yeah.
like, I always go back to that part of it is like, it's not just,
it's not, he voted for Trump. It's or voted
right.
for a
right-wing
party.
It's like you, like, if you go back and look at that, his quote unquote apology, like at no point does he walk back. Like if he doubles down on this on the bullshit narrative.
Right.
The Gamergate was about freedom of speech
right.
and about like respecting gamers,
which is
and,
just
like,
completely false.
It's wrong.
It
is
was
just
constructed
it is a will
after the point. Yes,
that is gaslighting.
Yeah.
Like he is attempting he and he's doing what he did before on a much broader scale with a much larger platform. Now that he has
a wildly successful yes.
game,
yeah, yeah.
is that like it is a willful intentional?
Let's be careful because I don't know. Did he say that stuff after the game blew up or not?
No, it was
right.
in January.
So I want to be clear.
But I'm saying you
I guess
can
the
go
Kickstarter
back. Like,
happened already, but yeah.
Right,
what
right,
I'm
right.
saying is like those comments exist in like
yes.
when people are going to go back and look at what
now.
Did he say?
Yes,
you're looking at that now with a like a deeply successful video game, and you look at those comments, and like it is a successful game developer actively gaslighting the narrative of like what Gamergate was, did, accomplished,
mm-hmm.
the harm that it did, and I have a lot of trouble squaring that, even though I like with you. I like in some level, because of all that, I feel this need to. You know what I mean? I feel like I just
yeah,
need
no, that's,
to know.
That's like the need.
Right? Like
of...
I feel like I just like I want to know. Like, is this expressed in
right.
the game? Like, I have an intellectual interest on the opposite end of it, which is like I want to know how this got into the game. How does someone that expresses those politics does that seep into the game? Does it seep into it in ways that are not obvious? Like capital R racism, right, but are like, you know, like much more vague and oblique. And
right, we just ran that piece from Duncan Fife on, not just now, about 3 weeks ago, four weeks ago now, on Police Quest 4, in which Daryl Gates, who was the head of the LAPD, chief of the LAPD for a little over a decade during a period of systemic oppression and gross abuse, including the Rodney King beating and the mishandling of justice around the trial, and then the LA riots that followed. That was a really interesting look into literally how – that game is filled with gross shit. Like that game is called Police Quest 4 : Open Season, which is like,
I laugh because of the audaciousness in retrospect of what – like obviously at the time I'm sure it was seen as slightly audacious by certain – but like now you just look back and go, what?
I mean it was seen that way. Yeah. One of the things that's interesting is it was seen that way at the time by people in the studio. Right. And that's one of those things is like – there are times in my life when I was like, why don't you just quit? Like, and I think there are times when it's worth quitting. I absolutely think there are times, there are people who've quit their jobs in the last year who I respect greatly for stepping away from places that are abusive or that have, or refusing to work with people who are harmful and who are making content that is terrible or dangerous or is, you know, oppressive or marginal or like harms marginalized folks or harms anybody. So I definitely respect that when people are able to like make that happen. But I also get what rent looks like and that like for a lot of people, especially people who are on the margins, it is even harder to step away in a case like that.
And it's also a case of whether or not you're telling yourself this, that, oh, maybe I can change things from the inside. Yep. Maybe I can be in the belly of the beast and I can try to make something good happen.
We've actively said we're doing that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Read that statement. We made that statement. I'm happy to say that the four things or whatever that we requested have been followed through on. And like, that's great. But that doesn't mean that like it's you sleep easy when like another fucking article breaks.
Things are good. It just means like you try and move the ball up the hill.
But also it's also to imagine a world in which, let's say I kept playing this game, I put another 10 hours into it. I'm starting to get into it. I like it. And I like it because it's good. And I like it because there's fun design stuff. And I think the combat is really interesting. I think there's interesting, you know, emergent gameplay or whatever. Whereas it can be, especially in our current position, very easy to slip into apologia, to slip into like, okay, well, let me find the version of a defense that still chides the lead dude but leaves open room for me to still like the game. And it's one of the difficult things about working in short form, comparatively short form work compared to when I used to be in academia, which is like, oh, I'm going to write 70 pages about this. There's a lot of room for nuance there and there's a lot of room to make it very clear, fuck that guy and like here's where it exists inside of a context and here's where these things come from. And like you will leave that 70 pages or whatever knowing exactly where my head is at.
You gave it its due.
I gave it its due
in the larger context
and
of the game.
But also engaged with it critically in a space.
It wasn't just a sidebar like, hey, man, he says some shit about Gamergate.
Right.
But back to the time when I threw shit on that guy.
And he was really mad. Exactly. Why did he hate the Pope so much?
Because I mean, we've engaged with this before, right? It's like we sort of fumbled our initial coverage on Life is Strange because we turned a blind, not a willful blind eye. We just dropped the ball in the way that you do sometimes. Tried to course correct on that, in which like anytime we talked about that game, which Danielle and I both are like big fans of that series and liked a lot of things that happened in Before the Storm, and tried to couch that with like, you know, building into the actual like critical discussion of the game is like our own uncomfortableness, both as like public critics and both as fans of like, yo, like this is shitty and what does it represent that I'm playing this? But like it was something that we sort of collectively said that wasn't like we didn't draw a line on it.
Right.
We said that like what was bad here was not egregious to the degree that we're still not going to engage with the work. Yeah. I think the difference there is because that wasn't a creative head of the studio making the game, making a decision to fuck over labor. That was like a dispute between a publisher and like the contracts. Like it, I fully understand if people say that's a not a meaningful distinguishable thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can have that conversation. We chose to make that distinction, at least at the time.
Yeah.
That's the part of what we like doing away, but I was looking back on that stuff. I'm like, yo, maybe we fucked that up. Maybe we wouldn't make that decision the next time.
I try to be as transparent as possible around this shit.
Yeah. But we try and talk about it as it's happening. I think this is where another one we're thinking like, okay, where's – the line. Like, you know, I think this is something we'll have to think about again. Like when Detroit Become Human comes out, now totally. That we know more about that series, like where is the line? And some of that line is like, how compelling is the work and what the work does that forces you to reckon with how do you come up with, not a rationalization, but like an explanation for why you're not just going to say, like, so for example, a couple weeks ago, I did a stream of remothered, tormented fathers, like a really
fucking name.
Kind of it's a bad name. It was a really fun stream. I spent 90 minutes of that game. It was goofy and weird. Had a lot of fun with the people in the chat. Got out of that stream. Had a number of people reach out and say, like, yo, like, this game gets really fucked up and transphobic as we're going along. And I had planned to stream that whole game. Instead, you know, what we made the decision was, like, rather than discover that along with the audience as we got there, was like, actually, like, there are better things to do with my time.
Right.
This game doesn't deserve our platform. And by streaming it, talking about it, even if we caveat it, we are especially – I think there's a difference between the average person – going and buying a compromised product. Yep. Yes, the money is important and like the vote with your dollar, blah, 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 blah. But there is a meaningful distinction when folks like ourselves that have like a public responsibility to like stand by our values or to like to work within those values and express those values is, and I think this is Austin, I think you'd mentioned this, we were talking about this internally, was like, even if we wanted to explore this game and figure out how we felt about it, the right way to do that is not, yo, let's boot up a stream and find out what's going on in Kingdom Come Deliverance, because that's the opposite of, oh, I'm going to go play it and then come back with capital, you know, T thoughts about it, which is a far in which you can explain that nuance, in which you can explain, like, here's what's fucked up, here's how it fits within that larger thing. Like, and that's, I think, where we've been trying to figure out is, like, how do we, even if we wanted to approach the game, what is the approach that doesn't go against the values of our site and also our community. I mean, that's the thing. Our community is a huge part of that.
Yes. You know, I the other big difference between an academic, you know, essay on this stuff that's, you know, dozens and dozens of pages long and the thing we write on the website or do a stream of or do a podcast of is people will read and listen and watch these when they won't do that.
Not
with the
like
academic,
four people.
Not like four people who are also like, oh, yeah, I'm already lined up with you on, like, I get where this fits. Like, no, like, there are people who come to us maybe not for purchasing decisions but for insight, for understanding what games are out there.
How should I feel about this thing?
I already feel this way, but I don't know the language for it sometimes. Right. Like, what is the language I can use to think through some of this stuff? And also, like, we do reviews now. We launch reviews, but we still don't think of reviews necessarily, or we still don't think of a lot of the work we do as just pure, like, consumer advocacy
product review.
Yeah. We do talk about whether or not you should spend time with the game. We just reviewed The Fall 2. Patrick just put up the Fall Part 2 review that was very frustrating because I wanted that game to be fantastic, and it sounds like it's only okay.
And that review is like pretty different than like the approach you took with like Monster Hunter
which is an essay.
Yes, talked about whether the game is good or bad or not, but like in a larger like what is this game saying sort of way.
But my point is like we can't even really have the alibi of like, well, we got to review it. It's a big game. Like that isn't part of our game plan. But really important to me was like how whatever format we take will be giving it space. A stream specifically, it's one of those moments that's made me think a lot about streaming as a format, because when you stream something, you discover it together and you don't always have the ability to collect thoughts, produce interesting language that can help – not even interesting language but a thoughtful language.
Yeah, considered.
Thoughtful words and thoughtful analysis of the work, considerate work, like you said, that actually works through stuff. And instead you go like, oh, that shit just happened, weird, and then you move on and that's not enough. To tackle this.
And that's very much how I felt when Rob and I were streaming Wolfenstein 2. For the first time, neither of us had seen anything about this game, and we're streaming it, and the shooting the dog happens, and the N-word happens, and the father beating the crap out of the mother happens. Sorry, I know this is a lot of trigger warning stuff right here. I mean, it's like content warning stuff. But this was all happening on the stream as, I don't know, there was a marching band next door or something. And it was one of those moments where... holy shit. And Patrick, you and I had this moment during the 72-hour stream when we were streaming.
Oh, yeah, that adventure game.
Harvester. Which is probably like one of the most thoughtless games ever made, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, like it's going for it, you know, for sure.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't double down. It just says, here's my whole ass.
Yep. It sure does. It sure does.
I'm proud of it. Look at this ass.
Soak it in.
Look at this ass.
It big. It a big ass.
It's all over the place. And I feel like we both had a moment, and Pat Bear was with us. Mm-hmm. We all had a moment of like, oh God. You know, like,
welcome to Waypoint.
Well, it was like, it was late too, yeah. Right?
It was after midnight.
I think, yeah, Austin, I think you were sleeping.
I was.
And it was like a question, well, how far do we push this?
Right. Like, are we going to get past this? Is this just a sign of the times or?
Yeah, right. It was a little bit that. Like, I didn't know much about the game. Mm-hmm. I didn't know of its history. We did a lot of reading up on it later and was like, oh, okay.
Sure,
let's say there were some red flags ahead of time about this game. But it was where you encounter like one, I think where we called it was like, the outright homophobia, like there was a moment.
There's the outright homophobia, and then the like really bad ableism with the guy with.
Sure, there was. Bad
I don't want to go into
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
It was bad
yeah.
stuff, and I but think we're like, where we, okay,
yeah,
you know, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, that was an instance where we didn't know going in, and Kingdom Come is in some ways similar to that. I haven't read any pieces that you know make the explicit argument that like here is the through line between
right.
this man's commentary and how it actually shows up in the game. This game is a huge, like
it's a big CRPG,
game.
CRPG, like traditional.
A lot of the coverage so far has been like very like the product review thing. Like, yo, is it too janky that you shouldn't
right.
buy it sort of thing?
Right.
And most seem to be leaning on like, oh, it's like a fun jank, Euro jank is the term I've heard.
Yeah.
So there hasn't been I feel like that's going to come, especially now that it's a success. Like I think there's going to be sort of a demand that like people like take a closer look, and maybe the conclusion people take is like shitty person. Those thoughts really don't show up in the work, and like I don't know if that necessarily makes you feel good about playing it, because it doesn't take away from their public comments, but I think it certainly complicates matters, especially I feel less like. I'm not like you where like I looked at this game and I was like, yo, this is my game.
No, totally.
Like I could be interested, but it's not within my like specific wheelhouse.
It's so easy for me to think about Austin Walker academic instead of Austin Walker journalist while looking at this game on Steam and being like, do I want to spend this money? Because Austin Walker right. academic does not get a code for this game from a publisher saying, hey, could you guys want to do some coverage of this, right?
Right.
Austin Walker academic goes like, ooh, I guess I could try – I could move some stuff around in my budget. I'm going to skip coffee for a week. Oh. Now I can get this game. But like also is like the person who was so fucking mad at the notion of like there are no black people in this game spoken in such a way as to be like this amazing like – it's like there was a he blew a whistle. It was a regular whistle and also a dog whistle at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
And two whistles in his mouth.
Is it an academic whistle?
There were like three different whistles he was blowing at once. That was like a wink to Gamergate and also a wink to white nationalists. It was like everybody in the Venn diagram completely hit by it, right? And I'm not calling him a white Nash. I don't fucking know. Like, I know also there was a bit where he was wearing a Burzum t-shirt. Burzum is a black metal band that had the lead dude from it, like, burned some churches and killed a person. Not cool. He's apologized for that also. He's just a fan of the genre of metal music. But
let's just say there's a history of stepping
there's
in.
There's a history. Right, right. Exactly. There's a history in stepping the fuck all the way in it, just, like, wiggling your foot around.
With his whole ass.
Also.
He's taking one step, one cheek at a time, whole ass, wiggling
there.
It.
And it's so easy to think about how like tortured I'd be over this, how torn I'd be over this, because it is exactly the sort of thing that I love. And like I have 30, 40, 50, 60 hours in Mountain Blade, various versions of Mountain Blade, which is like as janky as it gets. And this feels like a weird blend of Mount and Blade and Skyrim, where it's like, oh, wow, like the combat is like really about like – it's sort of like a little bit more complicated version of For Honor's combat, or not more complicated, less combo based, but more like focused on just like you have a sword and they have a sword. Which way are you going? Like which side are you blocking? Which way are you going to come in on them? It's like that stuff is stuff I like. I like the sort of like weird survival shit of like, oh, you have to eat to stay healthy and you have to make sure that your clothes aren't dirty because people will talk to you differently if your clothes are dirty or bloody. So you got to spend money to go to the bathhouse and like watch. Like it is exactly my shit. Like it's so exactly my shit. It is the thing that's like, oh, well, what if you did like this simulation style thing in this setting? And I like the notion of there being quote unquote historical settings. It's why I've always loved the Assassin's Creed series. I kind of roll my eyes and like, this is the first time a series has ever been truly historical. One, because there are limits to that claim, and two, because there are other games that have existed in other moments in history. It's a very limited. What they really mean is it's the first person RPG that they can think of that took place
that doesn't have dragons.
Right, well, it doesn't have
that's
dragons.
That's honestly like kind of what it
does
is
have potions. Context, does have healing potions directly.
Yeah. But does not have. I don't know.
No, but besides the savior shops, there's also just like healing potions that you drink to heal wounds.
Are there other potions?
I haven't got. There's a whole apothecary system. There's a whole like built like making stuff system. There's brewing and all that shit. So like that's the thing is like if you look at the features list, like Austin Walker, check. Also one of the checks though is
check
like
that brewing.
Is a black person is offended by this shit.
There
come on, like this isn't even that funny. Lots of checks there. And so it's been weird to watch this from the outside or from the inside. And like I don't know where I shake out on it. I don't know.
Yeah. We should take a very quick break.
Sure.
And then we'll come back. I have a few other thoughts on this.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
So this is related a little bit, more than a little bit, but on a smaller scale, I think, to something I also wrote this week about a game called Crossing Souls, which is like a little 2D action-adventure game that I was really, really enjoying. Not Foradic. I think it's Foradic, actually, is the name of the dev. I'm going to check that because I don't want to be a jerk.
How do you spell that?
Yes, it is for attic. As if you took the word for, like F-O-U-R, and then attic.
Like four attic. Like,
four
like
attic.
Not three attic.
Not three attic. Not five attic.
Gotcha.
Four attic. Really fun little game. I actually thought, you know, I looked at it at first and I thought, oh, they're trying to do Stranger Things. But this was also a Kickstarter game actually before Stranger Things.
Right,
it's just that
right.
happens
that same
to
vibe.
Kinda, yeah, very much that vibe. A supernatural thing happens in an 80s small town and this group of kids has to go and kind of have adventures around it. Was really enjoying this game. But it came, along with a lot of that sort of 80s writing came a lot of like really gross old kind of stereotypes. There's racist stereotypes. There's jokes about fat people. There's like a really nasty like gay stereotype kind of runs around swishing. And the main character actually calls him gross. He says, "You're grossing me out, man." And it's like, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Right.
So all this stuff sort of exists within this game that I was also really enjoying and having a very good time with, even more than I thought. This is certainly in my wheelhouse of like colorful pixel art,
right.
you know, action adventure kind of game that I sort of thought the 80s stuff was going to wear on me a little more. But I was like, no, that's
it,
actually
like,
kind of fun.
You.
It actually works as like this cute little pastiche.
Right.
Except for that part.
Except for the part where they also doubled down on, like, the bullshit from the 80s.
Exactly.
Not that stuff is gone now, by any means, but, like, specifically those types of, like, archetypical, oh, you're the big fat one. You're the one. You're a Chinese, like, shop owner who speaks, like, fortune cookies.
Fortune cookie kind of,
language.
Know,
yeah,
language,
yeah.
Basically, which is so gross. It was gross at the time. Like, if you go back and watch
Gremlins. Yeah, that stuff is also
Gremlins
bad.
Is as old as me. It's 34 years old. And you go back and you watch something like that, and it's like, oh, dude, oh, that was not necessary. Like, you didn't need this to have a fun and awesome movie that you wanted to make, right? There's so much of that. So it just feels kind of inexcusable to put something like this in your game without saying something with it, without saying, like, oh, this stereotype is stupid, or this is actually satire that is saying something that has a point to it. It didn't feel like anything other than, oh, well, it was like that in the 80s, so we should put that in the game.
Right.
Like, this really uncritical kind of thing. So it's like this waiter brought me this delicious soup. It's like, oh, my favorite soup. It has all these great, delicious ingredients. And then you just like hawked a loogie into it.
Right.
And it's like, well, that loogie is there. I can't ignore the loogie.
Which is like a really great metaphor of like, okay, you're going to go home. You're going to write your Yelp review of that restaurant.
Yeah.
Like, all right, everything was great, but also there was this loogie. Is that a 1-star review? Is that a three? Like,
but the soup was still good. I still ate that soup.
That soup was still good.
There was all this
I had to avoid
in
the loogie.
The end of it. It was ugh.
And then, but like, so like the options made available are like, all right, is there a footnote at the end? It's like, oh, but by the way, if Jim is the waiter, you get the fuck out because he's gonna spit in your fucking soup.
Right.
But if that's the case, then aren't
so
you
5-star restaurant, 1-star Jim?
Right. 1-star Jim. Right. But like, is that a footnote, or is by making it a footnote, are you burying it? Are you saying like, oh, this actually isn't that important? This isn't as important as the fact that the whatever. Like, I mean, we can just talk about Crossing Souls, right? So, like, yeah. is the homophobia in Crossing Souls is in a write up? If you did just have the sidebar, which is like, oh, and by the way, yeah. homophobia, doesn't that suggest to the reader that somehow is not as important because it's in a sidebar instead of it being in the body text?
Right.
If it's in the body text but doesn't come until the very end, same feeling. If it's in the body text but is really high up in the text, that can communicate that you hate the game. Or that you feel like the work is really, really important. And maybe it is. And maybe that is where it belongs. But like there are all of these techniques that we do have. I mean, we don't even have sidebars on the site. So that's not right. – that's literally not
we
a thing
we
do.
We don't have that technology.
That we don't have that in the CMS currently. But if we did, and that is a technique we've seen on other sites for sure, it's like each one that you do can communicate something, can miscommunicate what your internal feelings are. And it can be hard to find the right blend of taking it – and being here is what I feel about it, and finding like the technological and like editorial fit with that. I wish it was just easier because again, like I don't know what to, like if I wrote about if I went home this week and just played through all of Kingdom Come Deliverance, and I liked it. Let's say I liked it. I didn't think it fell out of line. I don't think that any of his ideology slipped in there. And who knows if it does or not doesn't. Like, I don't necessarily know what the Kingdom Come Deliverance review looks like when it comes to tackling Vavra's ideology. I do know that I would want to contend with it, but I don't know – and this is just all writing. I don't know what it is until I sit down to write it, you know?
And there's, of course, the issue of we have multiple ways – and we were talking about this earlier. We have multiple ways of covering things. We could do streams, which again are more sort of in-the-moment reactions. We could do a podcast like this where we sit down and we talk through something, which for me feels really appropriate for a lot of this stuff. So hence we did this
here
as
we
a
are.
Podcast.
Yeah.
Or in a written piece, there's always the just really annoying and it's a fact of how we live right now. The fact that it could get completely flattened into just sort of the hype cycle of, oh, you said this was garbage or you said this was amazing and that there can never be anything in between. So what do you do with your loogie soup?
What do you do with your loogie soup?
Yeah, it becomes very, very tenuous. And
It's tenuous, but it's also our responsibility to work out, right? Like,
it's our job.
I even think that there is a degree to which these conversations, there's a limit to the value of these conversations. I like having this one. I think this is a good one to have. Happy to have it. But we can't have this every time a new thing comes out.
Right.
One of the things I said about Kingdom Come Deliverance, and I clearly walked back on this, was like, I don't want to go out until we have a position. Like, I don't want to come out like, is it good? Is it bad? Who could say? Shrug. And like, we're not doing that here.
Three out of five.
Right?
I don't
know. Maybe he shouldn't sit in all that shit. Like, I didn't want to have that like very like unfinalized, unpolished, unsculpted position. I would like to, if something goes to live on the site, have it be informed and firm. Because what people often look to us for, as we've said this a bunch of times, is like helping them work through ideas they're already bouncing around in their heads. They might not agree with us. We get that a lot. We get a lot of like, hey, I listen to the show. I love you guys. I don't agree with everything you say, but you help me think through what I do believe. And that comes from insight that has been shaped and molded, I think, and like work together as a team on the editorial side, work together, you know, with sometimes it's like you and a partner or like you and end up old mentor. You're like, I just can't crack this one. Like, I don't know what to fucking do about this. Like, and that stuff takes time. And sometimes sometimes you get that gem where you're like, all right, here is what I feel.
Yeah.
And because the stakes feel high on projects like this, when things do fuck up, like we're trying to commit to make sure that we can have that firm thing that we stand behind, but also each time it's a risk that we fuck up and then like and miss it. So it is. Who knows? Maybe this time next week we'll have an article up. Maybe we won't. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's This, I think this gets us our own internal like rock up the mountain a little yeah. bit more, because also people they like we both feel an obligation to say, even if like we wanted to look at this game and go like, actually, yeah, we're just gonna take a pass, yep. we're just gonna punt on this one. At the same time, like part of our responsibility as a publication that you know talks about these values like openly, in some ways it feels like. Like punting on it's like
you're
not
fucking coward.
Like that's right. Yeah, like, totally. Like just because it's messy and like
just because you're gonna ruin you Twitter on yourself because you're gonna take a stand on this doesn't mean you shouldn't take a stand.
Right, like that's not an excuse. Right. It's like, yo, this is what you signed up for when you decided yep. you're gonna make a website that like is gonna explicitly talk about people's like designers' values, the studio culture, you're gonna put your own politics into it. So yo, it's a tough one.
But at the same time, I don't know. Been pretty open about not giving the platform over to people who we right. think are shitty.
Right.
Right? Like there are people that we've done, you know, research on, we've thought about doing profiles of, and we've canned those profiles and instead try to perform – do profiles of other types of people and people who we think celebrate people instead of like tearing down people, right? Not that we don't ever tear anybody down. Fuck David Cage. But like there are times when it's – where we're better served by spending the time that it would take to do the complex profile piece. I mean, like David Cage is a great example. I actually talked about this mm-hmm. with Emmanuel over at Motherboard, who were like, is there value in a David Cage profile? Is there value in sending somebody to France to like do the David Cage profile? What's that look like? Who do you send to go do that? What's the version of it that's a critical profile that right. is not just the like this genius David Cage? Who knows where you could even get access, because that's how the games world works. But is there value in that? And we kind of stepped away from that going like, I would rather send someone to go profile someone I've never heard of, or like someone who I think has a lot of potential in this space but who doesn't have PR resources, who isn't part of the broad conversation already. And so like, I don't know. These conversations happen or they don't happen. And when they don't happen, what happens is that the natural or the established biases of whoever's in charge in an editorial space just come out and they just kind of like run rampant. So I'm happy to have these conversations and like would rather swing and miss a few times on the way to figuring out how to do this coverage than just like go with our gut each time and be like, let's pass on it. Let's do it. Like let's cover David Cage because David Cage is huge.
Right.
Like it's tough, but it's a tough thing. For sure.
Yeah, because I mean, it's like, we wrote about PewDiePie.
Right.
Like we took a stand.
Right.
Like we said, like, no, like this is an instance where we like Waypoint is going to say, like, I wrote the article, but it, like, you know, we all had very unifying feelings on it. Like, no, like, fuck
yeah.
this. And like in a public way, fuck this.
Yeah.
Yep. But also we're a small staff and sometimes things get away yeah. from you. And like, that's also true. Like, but part of the reason we, you know, love the audience that we have is like when we do like occasionally like kind of just like punt on it because like yep. like we'll just look the other way, like our audience is usually smart
yep.
enough to like
yep.
to say like hey, come back
Hold
here
our feet
yeah.
a little
come
bit.
Back
yeah.
here
you know
yeah you don't get your dessert,
which I appreciate.
Come on,
yeah.
finish the meal, you know.
Eat your vegetables.
Exactly.
Vegetables are delicious. Yeah. I know, Austin. You probably
have to run.
Have to go.
Unfortunately, if y'all want to keep talking, you can keep talking. But I have to go.
No, we should. We're at an hour.
We at least, if nothing else, we have solved every problem we've ever had. You know.
Yeah, clear answers, and obviously a path forward, and we know exactly what we're doing.
Done.
We did it. So anybody, normally we do questions. Obviously, we pick from the question bucket, and if you have those questions, you can send them to gaming@vice.com. The subject question. Shout outs as always to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. I love that song. Every time I edit this podcast, I always dance around to it. I just wanted you to know that, you know, in case you didn't know. We're on Twitter at Waypoint. We're on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. We're on YouTube at Waypoint Vice. Austin, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker.
Amazing. Patrick, where can people find you?
One, no podcast on
yeah.
Monday.
Yeah,
oh,
we
that's a good
off.
Point.
We're gonna punt on the podcast on Monday because we have the day off.
Because yeah. we're cowards.
We believe in sleeping in. Yeah, yeah, exactly. God.
That's a good point.
Probably no stream. Also,
yeah,
don't count on the stream on Monday either.
Yeah.
No, like I'm probably gonna play Monster Hunter. We'll see.
That's exactly.
Austin, if our schedules line up with my daughter's nap
exactly.
schedule, then
no,
maybe
no
we can
promises,
find a way to make it work.
So.
Yeah, no promises.
No promises.
But otherwise, you can follow me at Patrick Clark.
Awesome. Thank you all so, so much. Really appreciate it.
What about you, Danielle?
Oh, yeah,
where
I
are
forgot.
You on the internet?
I'm not on the internet
yeah.
anymore. I'm just kidding. I'm at DanielleRI
there
on
it
Twitter.
Is.
That's where you can talk to me about things. I appreciate that. So as always, for Austin, for Patrick, and for myself, I remind you to be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.